How's it going? And welcome to episode 258 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings. We got a great show as we hit up the 13th overall fab period of the 2026 season coming up here on Sunday, June 14th. Kevin, how much money do you have left in most of your leagues? You're usually pretty good and pretty, you know, aggressively conservative. I think
I only have one. I could be wrong about this. I'll say one or two league where I'm less than half my money, and I'm still in the 400s in both of them. Yeah, so I have quite a bit. Most I'm sitting around in the 500s in most leagues, and we're 40% of the way through the season, and I do allow my weekly allotment to diminish towards the end of the year. I do want to be able to make my $2 bids the last couple of weeks of the seasons on anybody I want. But yeah, so 40% of the season through, and I have almost 60% of my money. I feel like I'm doing good. And even in the ones with, I'm in the 400s, I feel pretty comfortable.
I thought I was low on the totem pole in most of my leagues, or I'm specifically looking at my Earth League in Glarf, and I realize I have the third most amount of money in my league, and I thought I spent unwisely and on a few early bids, but now I'm feeling pretty good about that. Just the fact, now I'm gonna feel like it's burning a hole in my pocket though.
one of my big bids this season was Jacob Latz, and that's worked out. Sure. Another one of my bigger bids, and I think my bids were even bigger than they needed to be, was Jesus Rodriguez, and he's already been sent back down. So I think 50-50 is pretty good. It's better than 0-2.
Sure. I think one of my bigger bids on the season was Vientos became available, and I raised my bid like 10 minutes or 5 minutes before bids were due, right? And I got him. And I feel like he spent more time on my bench than in my starting lineup throughout the course of rostering him. But I haven't dropped him just because I felt like, well, I spent all that money. And that's one of those things. It's like you have to be able to separate yourself, of course, from sunk cost fallacy and be able to be like, all right, fine. I made a mistake. It's okay. I got to move on, and I need that roster spot.
Especially as we will talk later in the show with as good as Jared Jones has performed, who you did bring up a week or two ago. He was kind of off of my radar. He's still got some availability, so we will be talking about him for sure.
All right. Well, without any further ado, let's hit up the news section here. We got quite a bit to get through. I'm going to start from the bottom, Kevin, if you want to scroll down. I'm going to go up because I did put this in chronological order. So let's start a little bit earlier on in the week. The Chicago Cubs made a bunch of moves earlier in the week, and it all revolved around getting back Matt Shaw into the lineup. To make room, they send Kevin Alcantara back down. They also lose James Tyon to the IL, and there was news that Matthew Boyd expected return was going to get pushed back. So we're not going to see him filling in that spot for Tyon, but starting in the rotation, what have the Cubs done since to kind of fill that gap in the Chicago Cubs rotation?
Well, they haven't had to do a whole lot because the Assad, he's got some starts this year. Ben Brown, they moved into the starting rotation, and Colin Ray has gotten starts this year as well. They have an off day this week, so it looks like a two-start week for Shota Imanaga, and then the rest of the week. It may not have been often that we have seen both Assad and Colin Ray in the rotation, but that's what we're going to see for a bit now.
Yeah, especially with the Matthew Boyd not coming back
exactly
as expected over the weekend. And they're not getting Cade Horton back. Justin Steele had a setback as well. So they don't really have much options here but to just roll with Ray and Assad back to back, or maybe with Ben Brown kind of mixing it up a little bit. The other side of the coin here is they do get a piece of their lineup back in Matt Shaw, whether or not he's an everyday or even starting piece of that lineup is, you know, debatable. Probably the short side of the platoon, but what have we seen out of Shaw's return, if any changes whatsoever?
Nothing from him yet. He has not been in the lineup. It's kind of surprising to me. I kind of thought that Michael Conforto was playing his way into a little more playing time versus righties. And towards the end of May, he did have four straight starts. But now they're playing Moises Ballesteros as a designated hitter versus righties most days. So that's what's going on now. That's the biggest change I've seen in the lineup is five straight starts now for Moises Ballesteros.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, they've only been facing righties for what feels like forever. So we'll have to see what happens when they actually face a left-handed hitter. But yeah, more than likely Ballesteros gets a day off. Maybe
they have five out of six righties this week as well.
There you go. Well, maybe he gets a day off just because, but
right.
He could just end up playing five out of six.
In fact, that would be a Conforto day if he's going to get a day off versus a righty.
Sure. Going over to Baltimore, Ryan Helsley is starting a rehab assignment. He started one earlier on in the week, so he should hopefully be back for the Orioles maybe sometime next week. But looking really far ahead, I just wanted to get your take on this. Felix Bautista has also started a throwing program. Now, obviously we've been without him all year and then some, but do you anticipate there being any kind of battle for closer by the time Bautista makes his way back this year and, or going into 2027, Helsley's on a 2-year deal with the Orioles. Do you anticipate them to be some kind of battle in the offseason for that role, or do you lean one way or the other?
Maybe during the offseason, it'll be something we need to dive into a little bit, but I would expect with Helsley coming back quite a bit earlier that he'll be right back in his groove, and I don't think they'll mess with that if and when Bautista makes it back as well.
Do you think there's any possibility that if Bautista comes back either at or, you know, right around the trade deadline,
I knew that's where you were going,
that they trade Helsley thinking, well, we've got Bautista back now? Because obviously they can get with the contract, like going through next year, you can obviously get a little bit more for a closer or a reliever of any kind. With a little bit of control on the contract, and it wasn't a crazy contract either, if I'm remembering correctly.
If it was today, if the trade deadline, if we were coming up to the deadline right now, okay. I would say no, because Baltimore one game out of a wild card berth, that could be huge going into a postseason series with those two relievers. We see starters go less innings in the postseason, and so many guys, starters themselves, get used out of the bullpen that if they're still in contention, I doubt they would make that move. But if they fall out of it, sure,
why not? All right, well, we'll have to wait a month or two, or not even two, just, geez, I forgot, we're already mid-June, right?
Yeah,
where trade deadline is less than we're over 2 months a third away.
Of the way through it. Yeah.
Let's go over to the West Coast now with the Dodgers. Will Smith, as expected, did officially go on the IL. Backdated to June 8th, though. Expected to just miss the minimum stay on 10 days. So that's basically all of next week or most of next week, at least the first half in your lineups where you switch over midweek. Anything worth doing here? I mean, if you got Will Smith, you need a catcher at least for the first half of next week as well. But you're obviously not dropping Will Smith at this point. I saw Dalton Rushing was available in one of my leagues last year. He was, I think, the second one on my list. I ended up getting somebody else. So if I had Will Smith, obviously Dalton Rushing is the obvious one for one here, at least for the short term. Anybody else out there?
Well, Rushing would be my top choice. He's fairly heavily rostered. 93% main event, 65% OCs. So he is fairly heavily rostered. There's been some other catcher movement. Alejandro Kirk is back this weekend, but he was held almost everywhere. And if he wasn't held, he was picked back up by someone else. So he doesn't have much availability out there. There was one other one I was looking at. You kind of sprung that one on me.
Yeah.
Well, the really quick. Campusano's getting close. I don't know if we'll see him this week, but he's getting close. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, fair enough. I did end up grabbing Johnny Prada in the one league where I needed
it. I started him in a spot this week as
well. Yeah, I grabbed him because I wasn't sure what was happening with Sal Perez. And in that league, I realized also I had Amaya as my C2. I'm like, all right, well, I need a better C2. At this point, Amaya's just not getting in the game that often. But yeah, I ended up giving Prada instead of rushing. But if I'm in a spot in that league, I'll probably still grab rushing at least for the first half of next week.
It's a perfect week for rushing because they probably don't want him playing or catching every single day. The Dodgers face two lefties, four righties for the week, and it's an even split. Mm-hmm. So I expect we see rushing in the lineup versus the righties. So we'll see him twice in the first half, twice in the second half. And probably who was it they called up? They do have a backup catcher that I think they'll let him play versus the lefties.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Chucky Robinson. How can I forget that? Yeah, I got excited for him. Man, we haven't seen him in a while.
All right. Well, we will get to the Alejandro Kirk news in a little bit, but before we do that, let's hit up the AL Central. A bunch of stuff happening there in Detroit. First and foremost, they are getting a whole bunch of pitchers back. Of course, Tarek Skubal is set to return on Saturday. And then they've slated that Casey Mize will return on Sunday. This will push Trey Melton over to the Monday start. He'll get a two start. Even with the 6-man rotation, he'll be likely to get a two start week next week. But that is the news I saw, was that it is expected that the Tigers will stick with the 6-man rotation for the time being. They still haven't even they haven't gotten Justin Verlander back either. Whether or not he comes back or does anything, he's still a question mark. But did you expect to see a 6-man rotation here? Do you expect them to hold on to a 6-man rotation, if nothing else, just to keep, you know, Skubal and Mize, you know, healthy and with enough time between starts? Or is the other shoe going to drop at some point and they're just going to have to be forced to go with a 5-man?
Typically, that's what we see, but I think they'll try as long as they can. Some have Justin Verlander penciled in to return on Wednesday then as well. So that's getting three starters back in a matter of five games. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. That the sad thing is, the guy that doesn't belong in this rotation at all is Justin Verlander. And
right,
they're not going to do that.
No. Unless he does it himself.
At least not yet. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think for that reason, that's the reason they'll stay with the six.
Mm-hmm. Well, Detroit, I would say maybe Verlander is just at that point where maybe he should just be the closer. But you know what? Detroit just got their closer back.
And right.
That's another piece of the puzzle here is that Kenley Jansen did return to the back end of the Tigers bullpen. And they also brought in right-handed pitcher Jacob Wagenspach and outfielder James Outman. So Detroit's getting a lot of reinforcements this weekend in general. Jansen obviously just jumps right back into the closer role, as rusty as he might have looked. And kind of like how Josh Hader didn't look pretty rusty on his last rehab assignment. Jansen didn't look that great either, but you can't expect anything other than closing out games for the Tigers from here on out for Jansen, health permitting. Right.
That's my opinion. Yes.
Yeah. How does James Outman fit into the lineup here moving forward, if at all?
He's in it right away Friday night. This is something we're going to have to watch over the weekend. Matt Vierling has not played the last three games. Maybe they don't want him playing versus righties anymore. He was a part-time versus righties, full-time versus lefties, and now three in a row that he has not been in center field. And it might be, if Outman's enough better of a fielder than Vierling, that could have a lot to do with this as well. But yeah, we're going to have to monitor this over the weekend. If Outman is in the lineup versus righties this weekend, then that may be the case going forward for at least the near future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just interesting. When you see a guy like Outman, it's like he's just struggled. It seems like he should be somebody to do something, but he has been struggling ever since leaving LA in general. We'd like to see him get a little bit more of a shot or a little bit more runway and see what we can do with it in Detroit. Sticking with the AL West, we'll head over, say, our AL Central. The White Sox considering one move, made another move. Let's go with the consideration first and foremost, because I haven't seen an official announcement here yet. So it's still consideration as far as we're concerned, recording on Friday. They are considering calling up Hagen Smith to make his MLB debut on Saturday, one of their top prospects. Saturday would be nice because, of course, then he would be available for us to bid on. But the fact that they're just considering it and not willing to make an announcement about it is, all right, well, you know, kind of wishy-washy. Are you excited for Hagen Smith if he does make his debut on Saturday?
Goodness. I kind of. Here's the problem. You're going to get a lot of strikeouts, but unfortunately the whip might be too much to absorb.
Sure.
That's what I'm looking at. Double digit walk percentage in the minor leagues usually does not fare well on your major league debut. So that's the worry here. If you really need strikeouts and you have a pretty good cushion in your ratios, then yes, but otherwise I'm a little worried about this.
Yeah, who the White Sox are in Detroit over the weekend, but who are they playing in the first half of the week?
They are at the Yankees, and so Littlewire has Hagen Smith starting Tuesday at the Yankees, and then next Sunday at Detroit. They don't have him starting until Tuesday, but I had heard that report about Saturday as well.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so, if he starts on Saturday, he skips the Yankees and he'll get Detroit in Detroit.
Right.
So we'll see how that works out. The other move that the White Sox made, they made within the division, sending Nolan Jones over to, taking Nolan Jones from Cleveland for a bucket of money, basically $250,000 in bonus pool money. How does Nolan Jones fit into with his New Jersey?
I don't know that he does currently. I don't think he does, actually. Because, you know, Braden Montgomery, they called him up early in the week, and he's going to get some run here, I believe. It was a one-for-one with Nishida, so that looks pretty set. Tristan Peters has been performing pretty well in the outfield there for them as well. He's not going to take Meadroth's spot, or Colson Montgomery, absolutely not taking his spot. Benintendi is starting to lose more and more at bats, and even versus righties on Thursday, a righty on Thursday, he has not been performing the typical steady 260, 20 home run guy, is not materializing for us this season. So there is some movement, but I think the White Sox, they're going for it. They're calling up everybody. Right. I think that's why we're going to see Hagen Smith. Mm-hmm. Right. They are in first place in the American League Central, and they've called up Antonacci, Colson Montgomery, Braden Montgomery, Jacob Gonzalez. Right. This is fun. Evan Pereira, we'll see how much run he gets in the outfield. He did start in center field on Thursday, his first game back from the IL, but he's sitting on Friday evening with Tristan Peters back in center. So, yeah, they are young and a fun team to watch right now. I'm so happy for Mike Carter after the last couple of seasons.
Yes, he's always the first person I think of. But
yeah, I think they're going to play the young guys. And if Nolan Jones catches fire at AAA, maybe we see him. But yeah, I don't think he's part of the short-term plan.
Yeah, of course, bearing the lead a little bit on my part, but you nailed it. Braden Montgomery, also the big name here to get the call up for the White Sox, making his debut on Tuesday, making him readily available to add to your lineups in your weekly moves leagues on Sunday. Fab, I mean, this has got to be one of the bigger Fab bids maybe of the entire season. What's your overall expectation as far as Montgomery's cost going to be this Sunday?
I think it will vary greatly from league to league due to the possibility of the high strikeout rate. And that will scare people like me away from bidding too heavily. And in some leagues, I think he'll go for I think we're going to see a wide range of bids.
Well, the thing is you only need the one, right? You only need the one bid that goes high enough to scare everybody else away. So you don't usually get to see all the other bids. So it's like if all 15 teams in your league bid on them, it only matters what the highest one was. So if the highest one in every league is $200, $150, I mean, that was the bid.
But I don't think it will be. I don't think that will be the case in every league.
Yeah,
I think there will be entire leagues that nobody bids over $30 or $40, and entire leagues where two or three are going well into the triple digits. So it's going to vary a lot.
Yeah. I mean, obviously,
especially in the 12s, right? We see such a huge variance in bid amounts in the OCs.
I think that just the fact that he's an outfielder, though, and doing what he could possibly do, you're going to see a little bit more activity here. If it was, we've seen a handful of middle infielders come up and some corner infielders come up and some excitement here or there. But just the fact that, especially in a five outfielder league, the outfield, I just feel like there's going to be a little bit more need somewhere in your league, especially in your 15 teamers. And that just leads me to believe, to ask, do you expect Montgomery to have an everyday role? Like, luckily,
that's what I was just gonna say, because
he had a start against a righty and a lefty in his first two games
and hit in the middle of the order,
yeah,
versus both, right? He's hit fifth and sixth in all five of his games versus he's hit as high as fifth versus a righty and a lefty. Mm-hmm. That gives me confidence he is at minimum near everyday right fielder. I think it was a one for one with Nishida, and he was playing once in a while. He Nishida was sitting versus lefties, but not everyone.
Right.
So
that makes sense. All right. So we still got more AL Central news to get to and a whole bunch more. But first, we're going to take a quick break. All right. I mentioned that the White Sox made the trade with Cleveland to grab Nolan Jones. Cleveland is also debuting their own prospect in Daniel Espino, but they're going to be debuting him out of the bullpen. Do you expect that to change or get stretched out at any point this season for you to be actually interested, or is this just a wait and see situation?
I think it's wait and see at the moment, but it could turn into a little more, I think is where I'm going. But he hasn't even averaged a full inning per appearance in the minor leagues so far this season. 22 appearances, 18 and two thirds innings. Mm-hmm. So it will take some time to stretch him out.
Yeah. If they even have that need at any point, they have a, knock on wood, a fairly a healthy rotation as it stands. But still just obviously a top prospect within their ranks, you know, a name to just keep an eye on. Cade Smith seems to be holding down the post, and Espino doesn't have an, you know, a road to any kind of high leverage situations either. So, you know, just a name to keep an eye on. Philadelphia loses a decent bat, whether or not he was actually, you know, giving that bat the way, you know, you might have hoped. Adolis Garcia will not be attempting to do that, at least for the next 2 months, as he goes directly to the 60-day IL with a right lat injury. If you're holding on to Garcia at this point, he's an easy drop. I'm assuming, do you expect to see Garcia back by the end of the season, really?
Probably not, but it's kind of unfortunate because he had struggled for much of the year, but it seemed like he was heating up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he'd had a couple other spurts this season. So far in Philadelphia, Gabriel Rincones Jr., hopefully I'm saying that correctly. I think I'm pretty close. He got called up from AAA and is in there in Garcia's spot in right field on Friday evening with newly acquired Derek Hill on the bench. So I'm not so sure which way they're going to go here. They just acquired Derek Hill from the White Sox in that move, I believe.
Yeah.
So, I am not ready to say that Rincones Jr. is the everyday guy, but we probably will have a clearer picture by Sunday evening.
Yeah, it's just Nolan Jones. They trade Derek Hill and bring in Nolan Jones. The White Sox do, of course. And sometimes you just kind of see the puzzle pieces being moved around and you're just like, why? But obviously there's always money involved. There's, you know, personalities involved. We all watched or read Moneyball. We know that these things can happen just because you're in a bad mood in a way. So, you know, I'm just slightly curious to know how that kind of came about. Cause on the surface, it just kind of looks like, all right, the one for one type of situation. Let's get out of the AL Central finally and just make an announcement just to keep an eye on it. St. Louis has called back up Blaze Jordan to their lineup or considerations. What kind of role do you expect him to play for the Cardinals and possibly for our fantasy leagues?
Well, Nolan Gorman had started at third base in 7 of the last 9 games. And he had sat versus a lefty and a righty, sent to AAA, and now Blaze Jordan gets the call from AAA and he's in there at third base. This appears to be, for the most part, a one for one. Maybe we see Jose Fermin a little more often than we had been, but for the most part, it does appear to me that Blaze Jordan's going to get some run here. It might have some appeal.
Yeah, that was the one for one move, corresponding move, Nolan Gorman getting sent down to AAA, and they just, you know, they just swapped spots. And it's only been one day, to your point.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is kind of, it might be telling that since this was a one for one move and Jordan got the start right away and in the same spot in the lineup as well. Like Gorman had been batting 7th or 8th for the last 2 or 3 weeks after getting pushed down in the lineup and hitting, you know, 5th most of the time. So yeah, could see pretty much, you know, 5 out of 7 days a week for Blaze Jordan. And like you said, Fermin fills in as he had been anyway, you know, in those 2 out of 7 days.
Yeah, we won't see Fermin enough to be an asset to our fantasy teams. The question is, will he take enough time away from Blaze Jordan so that he's not an asset either? That's what we got to figure out. I think we'll be okay with Blaze Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested if Blaze Jordan to me seems like somebody who, if can get everyday playing time, could volume his way into relevancy. And if he doesn't, then you know, in daily moves leagues, you play him where you can and you kind of cross your fingers that he gets more playing time. All right. You mentioned this earlier in the show. Let's get into a little bit more detail. Toronto making a bunch of moves. One of the bigger ones, getting back Alejandro Kirk into their lineup. They also get Davis Schneider back in their lineup. This all comes at the cost of Dalton Varsho hitting the IL with left wrist inflammation of his own. A couple other smaller moves to make room as well, but with Kirk and Schneider back in the lineup and obviously Varsho out, what are you expecting out of the Toronto lineup that we should be watching for?
Well, because George Springer typically takes up the designated hitter, they have to find room. Now, we knew Kirk will get back in there. Valenzuela, in my opinion, performed very well, and they may ease Kirk back in. We may still see Valenzuela get quite a few starts with Kirk back. Maybe I think Kirk gets a majority of the starts fairly soon, within a couple weeks, but in the early going, it might be almost an every other day thing.
Yeah. Brandon Valenzuela has been playing pretty much every day and every single day behind the plate. It's not as though they were mixing and matching, giving him some DH spots to give him that much playing time. But I mean, he's playing 5 out of 7 pretty much every single when in the 7 day weeks that he has. So that's, it's unfortunate. And he's been performing well as well, at least in recent.
Yeah, I did go ahead and put Kirk in my lineups where I had held him for this weekend, but I am only expecting 2 out of 3. I expect he sits tomorrow. I expect they ease him back in, play a game, get a day off, play again Sunday.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if you had taken advantage of Valenzuela, you know, don't feel as though you have to take him out right away, at least for next week. Hopefully you're in a situation where you have Valenzuela and Will Smith and you can just hold on to him for another week. The other part is David Schneider. He also returned to the lineup after his short stint on the down in AAA, started in left field on Friday as well, near the bottom of the lineup. Wasn't playing every day or anything close to it before getting sent down. Is you expect them to kind of fill that same role now that he's back up, or do you think they're going to give him a little bit more run?
No, I think he's short side platoon. He did. I mean, I know it was only 660 plate appearances, and I know his triple A, but I haven't read anything on if he made a mechanical adjustment, but his strikeout rate plummeted in those 60 plate appearances at triple A. And that could be something that I haven't seen anything, but something I'm going to try to find out.
Varsho being injured for about 5 or 6 days prior to getting hit on the IL, get put on the IL officially on Friday. Miles Straw had been filling in for him at center field pretty much every day since. Expect that to be the same moving forward. Don't necessarily expect to be interested in Miles Straw per se, but the playing time will still be there.
Yep.
The Giants got back Ryan Walker. What's his role with San Francisco now that he's back in their bullpen?
The Giants have come right out and said that they want to stretch him out into a longer relief guy. So that appears what they did with him
before. This is exactly what they did with him
before. That's the plan. Yeah. I believe that came from Vitello, straight from the manager.
I mean, that's where for the longest time, he was doing so well and like so well that everybody's like, he should be the closer. But like he did his best work in those 2-inning stretches or in the 7th or 8th inning. And as soon as, you know, he got that closer opportunity and just seemed like this just wasn't for him. So maybe this is the right move, right? This is this is where he belongs.
And he can, the Giants, their bullpen's been a mess, so they need something. They need something. And if he could come in, you know, pitch the sixth and seventh, or come in and up some point in the sixth and get four or five outs through the seventh to get them to Keaton Wynn and Caleb Killian, that could help them a lot.
Yeah, fair enough. The Athletics, staying in the Bay or the greater Bay Area, the Athletics, who've been spending more time in Vegas than in West Sacramento, they got back Jacob Wilson, but it does come at the heels of Brent Rooker hitting the IL with a left knee bone bruise. Obviously, it's not a one for one due to position eligibility, but as far as like the lineup goes, I think a lot of us were wondering what was going to happen in the infield with Jacob Wilson, but do they have enough flexibility with the Max Muncy's and the Galofs and everybody else playing in the infield to just kind of backfill Rooker's spot in the outfield? Or, you know, what are you expecting to see out of the Athletics lineup?
Yeah. We're going to see, we already were seeing Colby Thomas versus lefties. That will continue. They have a more righty heavy. They'll be facing more righties this coming week mm-hmm. than they did this past week and this weekend. So that means Carlos Cortez back in our lineups, and hopefully he gets going again. He'd been kind of slowing down. Geloff's an everyday guy right now. I think we're going to see Lawrence Butler versus righties for a bit here. He's had a not good season. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even play versus every righty anymore, never plays versus a lefty, but we may see him for this week.
Yeah, of course, they've had quite a few lefties in the over the course of this past week, facing three out of four in their last four games. So we're not seeing Jeff McNeil in there. We're not seeing Cortez, as you mentioned. So to see them getting a lot more righties in the next week, things should kind of even themselves out in those guys' playing times.
It appears to me they want to be able to play Bolte every day. It's but he's still sitting with versus a couple of righties, but this, they may give him the opportunity to play more full time right now mm-hmm. as well. As bad as Butler has been.
Right. Like, I got no numbers to back it up, but I always see catcher. I mean, anything up the middle as somebody that you don't want to platoon if you can avoid it. Right. You want, because you're obviously playing these guys because of their defensive prowess at shortstop and at center field. And so Bolte having that capability, you want your best guy in center field with the glove whenever possible. The last thing of note, we got two things, but only one of them is really of note. The Brewers did lose rookie starter Coleman Crow, who had been up and down, making some spot starts or some, you know, a couple starts here or there throughout the season, to the 15-day IL with a right flexor strain. Any expectation on what the Brewers do with their starting rotation hole that Coleman was already filling?
It appears to me that they're going to be okay. Gasser, Sproat, Mizorowski, Drohan, and Harrison. I think that'll be the five for now.
Yeah. All right. It just seemed like Crow was the one that's like, all right, fine. We had to fill a hole. I can't remember what the hole might've been. It might've been, when Woodruff went down, or no, it was Logan Henderson. And then now Coleman just ends up adding to the pile that is the Minnesota. I mean, they have a full rotation pretty much. Quinn Priester hit a setback as well. Brandon Woodruff does look like he's a little closer to returning from his shoulder inflammation. But obviously Logan Henderson just went down, and then Crow adds to the mix as well. All right. Well, the last thing I'll say is just, you know, kind of housekeeping. It did come across as official that Chase DeLander is having UCL surgery. So if you, for whatever reason, were still holding on to him in your redraft leagues, please stop doing that. And save yourself, you know, the trouble of wasting a roster spot. Cause we're not going to see him for the rest of the year. With all that, I think it's time we look to see what's out on the wire, Kevin, and what we can add to our teams. But before we do that, We're going to take a quick break. All right, we are back. Of course, you're still listening to On the Wire, and we thank you very much for doing so. We're going to get into all of the recommendations and all the categories as we typically do after finishing up all the news that relates to your fab considerations. Of course, there was a bunch of other news that happened that we skipped. You should be checking out the First Pitch podcast every single day, and then Nick Pollock's Plus Pitch podcast most days throughout the course of the season to get your fix on everything that happened with all the starting pitching from the day before and insights into streaming options for the next day, especially in your daily moves leagues and leading up to your Sunday fab period. Good to just always have that fresh in mind throughout the course of the week. Listen to that wherever you're listening to this podcast. But Kevin, that's enough talking about pitching already. I know we're a pitcherless podcast, but we gotta talk about hitters. Who is out there that can add to our power categories? Of course, we're talking home runs, RBI. That is still readily available for us to consider.
Yeah, I told you we'd talk about Jared Young, everyday first baseman now for over a couple of weeks. He is only 72% rostered in main events and only 5% in online championships. So he is now the concern with Jared Young was that we were expecting to see Polanco back pretty soon. And before the season began, we were told Polanco was going to play first base for the New York Mets this season. But he's had another setback. It doesn't appear to be too serious, but he's going to sit down for a few days. I think it gives us at least another week of Jared Young. And if he continues to produce as he has so far, they're going to have to figure something else out when Polanco does come back, because they need Jared Young in that lineup.
Yeah, that's I feel like somehow Jared Young gets talked about every week for the last 2 or 3 weeks.
He got called up, you brought him up. Yeah. And then a little bit last week, and I was a little surprised that he still has the availability he does, especially only being 5% rostered in 12s.
Mm-hmm. But it's a nice shout out because he is playing, regularly, and obviously people have got this.
And he's the reason your Vientos isn't playing any longer. Yeah. And in fact, Vientos might not be long for this roster.
Maybe. And if that happens, then he'll finally not be long for my roster.
There you go. Sometimes that's what it takes to get us to make the move. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I do that way too often.
Yeah, I see Bryce Eldridge on this list. I was happy to grab him in one of my 12 teamers, and that's the only place that you're going to find him available, of course, at this point, as he continues to do what he was expected to be doing across the board as well.
Yep, and a couple of big moments for him this past week, and I think the face of the franchise, he's taken that spot, as was if not expected, definitely hoped for. So that's really cool to see. Lars Nubar coming back, 2 home runs already in the first 5 games back, 51% rostered in 12s. He is 98% rostered in 15s, but always check, as you like to say. And then, I did put Dalton Rushing here for this week. There is the worry that we would see Will Smith back for the weekend, but I think I would give Rushing a shot, even in 12s where he's available, in 2 catcher leagues.
Fair enough. All right, well, let's get some speed on the board then, Kevin. Stolen bases, run scored. Who is running amok for you in this next week's matchups?
Well, If he's going to perform anything like he did in the minor leagues, Cole Kerrig, who has been up with the Colorado Rockies now for 4 games, including his start Friday evening, started all 4 of them. He already had 30 stolen bases in 57 games at AAA this season. He had 46 stolen bases in 123 games last season. He had 53 the year before that. He's gonna, the only worry is Colorado. right? Even with these four consecutive starts, as soon as he was called up, Colorado really confuses us sometimes, but it does appear he's getting this run. And with making his debut on Tuesday, obviously he's not rostered anywhere.
No. But yeah, I mean, this seems like a lot. It seems like a lot of stolen bases that it could be possibly up for grabs. So Cole Kerrig seems like somebody, if you're like me in more than a handful of leagues, you need to take note of for some added speed.
The question is, Jake McCarthy's been out with an illness the past 3 days. Now, that first game when Kerrig was called up, they were both in the lineup. But we have seen Sterling Thompson get some starts in the outfield. They have dwindled recently. And I would expect that to continue and Kerrig stay in the lineup. But like I said, the only thing that worries me about playing time here is the fact that it's the Rockies.
Yeah. Fair enough. You never know what to expect here. All right. So we got some interesting schedules ahead. Very similar to last week. Not a lot of teams with a 7-game work week, but there are some that you should probably take a look at, including the Athletics, who spend the entire 7-game stretch back in West Sacramento. May not, surprisingly, could be a downgrade from what they were experiencing in Las Vegas after what we saw there.
The shocking thing about that was the one game that was, I think, against the Brewers, 4-3. I was like, where'd that come from?
Yeah.
That's a pitcher's duel in Las Vegas.
The Angels also have a 7-game work week. They got 3 at Arizona and 4 at West Sacramento. So, you know, there you go. Take half of that with a grain of salt. Nobody, as the MLB, I will give credit to the MLB. Every week I see this, nobody has a 5-game work week. Everybody has only one day off besides the Athletics and the Angels. Colorado will be splitting their time. They will be 3 at the Cubs, but they will host the Pirates for 3 over the weekend. Cincinnati also splitting their time in and out of Great American Small Park with 3 hosting the Mets to start the week, and then they head to New York to face the Yankees over the weekend in Yankee Stadium. These are interesting. We talked about this right before we started recording, Kevin, so I'll let you talk a little bit about it more, but it's interesting that the World Cup is impacting the schedule of Major League Baseball in general in the host cities that are impacted by them.
Yeah, I don't know where the World Cup is playing in Philadelphia. I don't know if they're playing in at the baseball stadium. Mm-hmm. I no idea. But Kansas City, they're playing at Arrowhead, and they share a parking lot with Kauffman. So that's not going to work out. So that's the reason there. It is due to the World Cup games. But the biggest thing for me, yeah, it's already a concern when we're going to have the hitters of these four teams only have 2 games and everybody else gets 3 for the weekend. Mm-hmm. But the two that get the worst of it are the Cardinals and the Mets. They both face a righty and a lefty most likely next weekend. So that makes it tough already. And for the Mets, the lefty and righty are Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler. So as I told you before we started recording, I think I'm sitting all Mets except for Juan Soto, even though the accolades I just gave Jared Young.
Yeah. But still, like, even if any of them miss a game, that one game that they do get in there, do you want them facing whoever that is anyway? And yeah, I think it's you have to be in a pretty desperate situation to start any Mets over the weekend, just due to that situation. But if you're not desperate, or if you're desperate in a completely different area, Kevin, who is out there that you might be able to bid on to play instead of playing your Mets over the course of next weekend?
I haven't decided if I'm actually interested in this yet, but I don't think there's anybody out there that's not rooting for Trey Mancini, who has not played in Major League Baseball since 2023 and is now back up with the Angels and has started three of the four games since being back. And they have that awesome schedule, three at Arizona, four at West Sacramento next week. I might actually have Trey Mancini in my waterfalls.
I mean, why not? Right.
Yeah. I'll feel good about putting him in my lineup. I may not feel good when I take him back out, but I'll feel good about putting him in there.
I mean, this is like one of those like perfect storms, right? It's like there be situations where you're like, all right, I'm rooting for him, but just not on my team. But with the 7-game work week, the four of those being in West Sacramento, why not? Right? Yeah. Why not? I like the call out there. That's nice. All right, let's we'll get into our pitching recommendations here in just a moment. But before we do that, we're going to take another quick break. All right. We talked about, you know, obviously Melton's not going to be available. He'll be pushed into his two-start week, but handful of other two-start options that you may want to consider, Kevin. And then anybody else that just has a good matchup in general. It doesn't have to be a two-starter, but who do you have your eye on to win for, to fill up your wins in strikeout categories?
Yeah. Keep an eye on Hagen Smith. If we see him this weekend and he's available, like I said, careful with the whip in that situation. If there's a big bunch that you're a part of in your league in whip, which can happen in a lot of leagues, it can really be a bunched up category. I would have reservations, I think is the best way to put it. A couple of guys that I don't want to have to use, but they might be the best available. David Peterson, it appears that we will see him on Monday for the Mets. It's at Cincinnati. Cincinnati has not been great as a lineup all season. But once again, the whip that David Peterson could put up with those walks, I think in four of his last five appearances, he's had at least three walks. So, I don't want to have to use him, but we might have to. There's not a lot of availability. It's back. I think it was last week we had more selections. It had been really dry, especially in 15s. A couple weeks prior to that, and we're back to that. Another guy I really don't want to have to use, but Lucas Giolito with this two-step at St. Louis, at Texas. I'm worried about at St. Louis. That's something I did not think I would have said before the season began, but I'm worried about that one much more than at Texas. Yes, the Texas Rangers have performed better recently, but it has been the worst ballpark as far as runs being scored so far this season. So I think Giolito will be safe in that start. Just that fact alone is going to have me lean Giolito over David Peterson. And I think he has more availability as well. They're both nearly universally available in 12s, but Giolito's rostered in 70% of mains. David Peterson only in 30% of mains. And then my favorite of the week, only 3% in 12s, but 68% in 15s. People were ahead of the game on this for this week. Andrew Alvarez, he has a pretty nice two-step, actually. He will get for Washington, who's scoring the most runs in baseball, so we're chasing wins with all that run support. He gets the Kansas City Royals and at Tampa.
There you go. Well, another piece of news just came through during today's game. Spencer Strider, and this is timely just because we're in the starting pitching categories here. Mm-hmm. Spencer Strider did leave his start early with arm, not fatigue, just soreness. Arm soreness. Problem is it was his throwing arm. So you don't want any soreness in that arm per se. J.R. Richie was called up and was re-added to the Atlanta lineup or pitching depth. At the major league level earlier in the week, I'm assuming if Strider has to miss any time, that
he'd probably get that shot on Thursday. Maybe they could skip it. They have an off day Monday, so they could move Perez Elder up, and then we'd be looking probably, let's see, we'd be looking at him about next Tuesday, because this doesn't sound good for me. Just, I don't know anything other than what you just read me. That doesn't sound good for Strider. So, no. I might grab Richie where he's available.
Yeah.
He didn't work out the first time. But no. Some of these guys perform much better their second time around.
Sure. And I mean, it was, you know, it might even be, here's funny is that he was called back up. He hasn't made an appearance yet. I mean, actually, he might be in this game right now. I don't even know. But if he was called up to join the with the expectation of joining the rotation, you think he would have gotten called up and started by now, right? And if he was called up to just give depth to the bullpen, this is kind of what I would expect how to work out. They didn't call him up with the expectation Strider was going to get hurt in 3 days after the call up, right?
He took Strider's place tonight.
He did. So he's pitching
right there now, through the seventh inning. He has pitched 4 full innings, given up 2 hits, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts, 0 runs.
I mean, he might have just put himself in the rotation with being stretched out in that manner.
Right. So. And he lines up for that to be in Strider's spot next Thursday. So if Strider goes down, I think he absolutely earned that start next week tonight.
Mm-hmm. And maybe even worst case scenario, it ends up being a piggyback thing.
In fact, this is going to make him even more expensive than he was going to be where he's available this week.
Well, there you go. J.R. Richie, bringing your stock up, you know, one relief outing at a time. Well, speaking of relievers, those are usually the ones that we're looking at to fill in our ratio holes that are made by our streaming options that fail us in the wins and strikeouts category. So, Kevin, who is going to buffer out your ratios if needed?
My new addition this week, he's been back for 7 appearances, is yet to give up a run. His whip is under 1 as well. We've talked about this guy in this position in years past, but he's been banged up recently. AJ Minter back in New York, mm-hmm. performing amazingly. And I believe, not just his most recent, I'm hoping this is what we start to see, is it's only been 1 appearance and it was his most recent, but it was for more than an inning. I'm hoping maybe we see these 1 2/3, 2 inning appearances out of Minter, because he is a guy that typically gets us. He can go back-to-back days. He can go 3 or 4 times in a week, unlike a lot of these guys that we only see the 2 innings a week out of them.
Fair enough. I do like the guys that can volume their way into better, more impactful ratios in that sense as well. But more volume categories here. The last one here, the saves category. You got an interesting name on here to start the list. So I'm going to steal it from you just because you also at the top of, like, when you look at, because of the alphabetical orderness of the Athletics not having an actual city, the Athletics show up at the top of every alphabetical list. You got Hogan Harris on here, who just blew a save earlier in the week, got a hold in the day on Wednesday. On the day he got a hold, Elvis Alvarado was the one that ended up with the save. Harris being the pretty much lone lefty at the top of the lineup, do you not have some fear there that's just going to end up being, you know, not only a committee, but somebody you can't trust to get you the amount of saves that you probably need?
A little bit. I also am not a huge fan. Well, I'm not a fan at all for pitchers of his home ballpark.
Sure.
Either. But it just seemed to me, at least throughout the week leading up to this, and that I just feel like Hogan Harris probably ends up with the most saves out of this bullpen. You're right. There's only one other lefty in that bullpen. But it just seems to me that overall he's been the best performer in that spot for them. But I agree. It's still by no means a done deal. I wouldn't spend a lot of money on him.
Sure. Make him a part of a waterfall. And break glass in case of emergency.
Another guy with very little availability, although it's over a fourth of 12s he's available. Caleb Killian in San Francisco, I think he's their guy. I think they finally might have a guy. And he's 100% rostered in 15s, but we're probably looking at 2 to 4 weeks for Pagan, and they have not been able to find a replacement for him in Cincinnati. Not that they've needed someone very often to try to close out a game in Cincinnati, but he's available in 25% of 12s, but fully rostered in 15s. Lang wasn't picked up everywhere and has continued to be the guy in Kansas City. He was picked up almost everywhere, but I think only like 87% even of mains. So let me double check that. I don't want to give you bad information, but
always check.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
In Arizona, AJ Puck had a setback during his rehab. Not as though he was going to take over for Paul Sewald, though, you know, at the beginning of the year, I think some of us might've thought that AJ Puck and Justin Martinez would come back in back-to-back situations and fight themselves for the closer position at Arizona. But obviously Paul Sewald has a hold on that position for Arizona. But if you were kind of eyeballing AJ Puck, just know that that's not happening sooner. It's going to happen later rather than sooner.
I think Grant Taylor, he's universally rostered in 12s and 15s on NFBC right now, but he probably has some availability in other leagues out there a little bit. Mm-hmm. Appears that he is finally taken over the job that many thought he would start the season with.
Right.
He's been phenomenal this season. He just hasn't had that opportunity. He has gotten it a couple of times recently. And then what was it? I just looked up. I looked up something and I forgot what it was.
I want to say it was the Killian's. No, it wasn't Killian. It was somebody's availability.
Oh, yeah, it was Lang. Is 100% rostered in 15s, but only 86% of 12s. Only 86%. Oh, but available in some OCs out there.
There you go. All right. Well, decent amount of names to keep an eye on. And again, always be checking. ABC, right? That's the ABC, mm-hmm. right? Always be checking your list of free agents. You never know who you might come across. Like I said before, I was looking for a catcher. Dalton Rushing happened to be available, but he's rostered in most other places. So every league has that guy that you can be like, oh, I'm surprised he's available. So always be looking. We got one more category to get to, and I'm not even going to bother with another break here, Kevin. We'll go right into it. The wild card section here. It's my favorite one. I can't wait any longer. Who you got on here that we should be keeping an eye out for or adding to our watch list or whatever other wild card reason you got for me?
Yeah. So both of my wild cards, I have two this week. One of them we've already talked about a little bit. And the reason they're wild cards for me is I don't think I'm going to use them this week. So Braden Montgomery, we talked about him. Garrett Cole and Carlos Rodon, Scooble, Mize, some of the pitchers he's facing this week. I'm not real enthused about sending a rookie out there against that for the week. Three lefties, three righties. Who knows? He may sit a bit. So Braden Montgomery, he won't be available next week, though. So if you want him going forward,
sure,
it's a move you have to make this week. And then Spencer Jones, it's at least 2 weeks before I'm really interested. But if he's going to get the everyday playing time versus righties, people are probably going to start picking him up this week. It may be your last chance to get him inexpensively. the Yankees face three lefties, three righties this week, so it's not a great week. You maybe could get him in there over the weekend with the two righties. And then the Yankees place four or five lefties the following week. We're looking 2 weeks out. A lot of that could change. But the way I'm looking at it with Spencer Jones, it's going to be a couple of weeks before I can put him in my lineup. But they do have some games versus righties. So if I can get him cheap this weekend, I have a couple of weeks to see how he performs.
The question I have with Jones is if Jason Dominguez is as close to returning as some reports indicate. And I mean, how will that impact Jones's just playing time in general? Like you said, he's not playing every day already. And to add Dominguez back into the mix, Stanton will probably come back at some point as well. Does that kind of push Jones to the side, or do you expect him to fight his way into that kind of playing time, you know, in a couple of weeks that you're hoping for?
I don't think they want Jason Dominguez in their outfield. And Ben Rice is their designated hitter most days.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. I mean, Ben Rice is going to keep playing, right?
Right. That's what I mean. I don't think that they will not play. So
it's not Jones that loses.
They will not play Dominguez or Stanton in the outfield over Jones. And Ben Rice is the designated hitter. I think Dominguez and Stanton are the ones in trouble even when they come back.
Fair enough. Whether or not, I mean, I know
Goldschmidt. Of course, this depends on Jones, what he does until that point.
Sure.
Yeah.
He's got to earn that.
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So far, they're giving him all the righty starts in right field.
Yep. Unfortunately, they, you know, had a pair of lefties in the last week, and so
got some coming up this week as well, and the next 2 weeks.
And this is your point, right? This is your point. Yeah. Like, you got to keep an eye on these matchups over the course of the next couple of weeks. Yeah. If you're not going to get that kind of volume play out of somebody like Jones, it's like, all right, maybe he forces the issue, maybe he doesn't. And I just play him in those. I mean, he ends up becoming a team streamer, as you know, to steal a term from Paul Spohr. He sits in your bench when you know he's got four out of four righties for the first half of the week. You put him in your lineup for that week, and you sit him over the weekend, or vice versa.
Exactly.
All right. Well, nice. Well, Kevin, with all that in mind, anything else? What else do you got for us as we head into the weekend, as we're almost halfway through June? As I mentioned before, just you look up at the calendar and you're like, oh wow, all right, yep, we're already here.
I have briefly talked about this in the past, and I almost went through this at the very beginning of the show when you were asking me about how much fab I have remaining. And something I've brought up a couple of times recently and credited Vlad Sedler both times that it was him that I heard it from, was that many times these $1 and $2 guys at the bottom of our waterfall would have helped us just as much or maybe even more than the guys we had at the top for $15 to $20. Right. And then for me, I have also wanted to try, not get crazy, but try to hit on one or two of the more expensive guys earlier in the year, if I can. So saving money throughout the season allows me to do that. And I heard Jason Anthony from FTN Fantasy Podcast with Vlad Sedler was on Benched with Bubba earlier this week. And Bubba asked him about his waterfalls, and Jason Anthony went right into this conversation. And they brought up John Posma. And I've played in two main event leagues against John Posma. He does not spend a lot of money on his turn and burn guys, but he'll spend money on somebody he wants to go get. And for somebody that has performed as well as John Posma has at this game for so long, especially when it was a subject that already made a lot of sense to me, and I already kind of thought, yeah, this is a transition I need to make. the fact that somebody like John Posma is playing that way just reinforces it.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, look, it's like in any other aspect of your life. Look at what people are doing who are being successful and try to do it, if not the same, better than what they're doing.
Right.
Try to work on it and when, work it into your own thing.
When Bubba and Booms were discussing it on the show, I actually caught myself thinking, kind of like I say with streaming pitchers, if you don't stream pitchers, you're not going to hit on the surprises because whoever streamed them will already have them rostered.
Right.
I think that goes for the cheaper guys in Fab as well. I don't know if our $2 to $4 bid players are overall any worse than, you know, the lower double digit players. Sure. And in fact, many times better. And how many times have you had a guy in your waterfall and then he goes off, but you didn't get him because you had a guy you had higher and you're like, I wish I wouldn't have got, or I wish I would have had him higher. And I just feel like it's kind of like streaming pitchers. You'll hit on a couple of really cheap guys that you won't be able to pick up because it's too late. Somebody streamed them that week.
Yeah. And not only are you not getting them that week, you're not going to get them the next week because either they're going to be kept or they're going to be dropped. So it's like, you can't just keep, you know, getting them. You have to wait another 2 weeks before you have a possibility of bringing them on. And then maybe the matchups don't exist. Like, you're just going to end up missing out on those situations more often than not.
Exactly.
Nice. Good call outs there. But with all that and everything else, that's going to wrap it up for episode 258 of On the Wire. I am Adam Howe on behalf of Kevin Hastin. Thanks for listening. And we bid you goodbye.